Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Ooh, Roger's breathy today.
Ooh, breathy.
Sorry, I was trying to avoid coughing into the mic.
Oh.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I could cough if that would make people at ease.
Your Russian name, Roger Kudkoff. Yep, I like it.
All right. We have so much Amazon to get to. Sorry. That's nothing to
we really do
cough at.
No.
Here we go. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks to every single one of you, including High Tech Oki, Jim Hart, Logan Larson, and James Irizarry. On this episode of DTNS, Amazon brings its voice assistant into the large language model era, announces tons of new hardware, and OpenAI releases a new version of the image generator DALL-E 3. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, September 20th, 2023, in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Sourdough, I'm Sarah Lane.
Whoops, from Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chan.
Scott forgot who he was.
We hope that you've recovered from the slip.
That was a big Scott. Surprise. Big surprise
Whoops.
To me.
Yeah. Whoa, that's me. I don't know what y'all were doing 20 years ago today, but I was getting hitched. So happy anniversary to my best friend, Eileen Rivera.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well done.
Sorry, I didn't mean to rub it in. I'm just trying to wish my wife a happy anniversary. Let's start with the quick hits.
Microsoft's head of gaming, Phil Spencer, responded to roughly 100 internal documents being accidentally uploaded to a U.S. court website related to the now withdrawn U.S. FTC versus Microsoft lawsuit. In a post on social media about the exposed documents, Spencer said, quote, "It is hard to see our team's work shared in this way because so much has changed and there's so much to be excited about right now and in the future. We'll share the real plans when we are ready."
Oh, the real plans.
Mm. Oh, gosh, yeah.
In an unrelated leaked memo, it's a week of leaked memos, Microsoft's head of consumer marketing, Yusuf Mehdi, told employees that Thursday's Microsoft announcement, scheduled for 1 p.m. Eastern, will include AI efforts as well as new Surface hardware. This feels more like an intentional leak. Microsoft has reportedly been developing an AI-related chip for its products, so it could be AI in the hardware. I expect it probably will be. Also, Mehdi said that the Windows Web and Services units are now being brought together into a single unit, which makes it sound like Windows is going to become even more cloud-reliant, integrating web services and AI.
WhatsApp for iOS includes native support for the iPad now, seen and reported by WA Beta Info. The iPhone version could previously be used on the iPad. Many iPhone apps can be, but the new iPad version is customized for a larger screen. Users can link their iPad app with an iPhone version, and that would port over existing messages. The test flight version of the iPad app is maxed out on users with no information about when it will come to the general public. So, for now, expect this soon-ish?
Maybe. Yeah. China's Ministry of State Security accused WeChat on Wednesday. That the U.S. has continuously attacked Huawei's servers since 2009. It also includes U.S. tech companies, accuses U.S. tech companies of installing backdoors on software to steal data from China and Russia. The Post specifically called out spyware called Second Date as being developed by the U.S. National Security Agency.
As we mentioned in GDI yesterday, Max is launching a live sports add-on October 5th under the Bleacher Report brand. Existing Max subscribers will get it at no additional charge until February 29th. Then after that, they have to pay $10 a month to include it if they so desire. You don't have to. You would just choose to. In addition to studio shows like Inside the NBA, one of my favorites, the Bleacher Report add-on will have live games from the NBA, NHL, MLB, men's college basketball, cycling races, and also soccer. All live games on cable or broadcast will be included as well.
All right, let's get into that DALL-E news. Hello, DALL-E.
Let's do it. Hello, Dolly. How are ya? OpenAI announced version 3 of its image generator, Dolly. D-A-L-L-E, just in case you were confused. It understands context better and integrates with ChatGPT, so says OpenAI. So, for example, you could tell ChatGPT to write a prompt for DALL-E 3. OpenAI uses external red teamers. That is a group that intentionally tries to break a system to test its safety for the better of everybody on the other side of it, to develop better safety measures for DALL-E 3 to help prevent creation of explicit or violent images. DALL-E is also instructed not to create art in the style of living artists. Artists can send images to OpenAI that they wish to exclude from the training models as well, if they're kind of worried about it somehow getting in there. ChatGPT Plus and enterprise subscribers will also get the new DALL-E in October, followed by researchers and API users later in the autumn. OpenAI didn't offer a time frame for a free version, but one would assume they would hope that some free users would play around with it and make it a little bit smarter. All right, Scott, let's start with you. As somebody who, you know, is very into image generation from the human sense, what do you think about the latest version of DALL-E, DALL-E 3?
As a human art generator. I actually think this is really good news, and I hope it's probably not they're probably not the only group, AI group working on this to ensure future versions of their image generation.
They're certainly getting sued the most though, right?
They are getting sued a lot. That's a big motivator, it turns out. If you really want to get somebody to do something, often a suit will do it. But the fact that they are, I think, is really good news for the future of all of this stuff. And I hope others follow suit. You know, we don't really know how it's going to present itself until we see it in action. But I like the idea that the model will at least do its best, or hopefully do its best, to avoid some of the trappings that are around this thing, like taking other artists' work or having been trained on it, producing artwork that looks just like theirs and then others using it or selling it or whatever. These are all big problems in and around this stuff. And it's part of the reason you don't hear much or as much controversy when it comes to ChatGPT, because people are doing a lot of tech stuff. And I'm sure that some people are saying, well, Scott, they can also write in the style of so-and-so and write in the style of
I have heard people
author.
Complaining about that and suing Chat. I think George R. R. Martin just joined a suit against OpenAI.
It makes sense because that, you know, it's kind of the same problem. But I feel like the image stuff gets more stage time because it's visual. And everybody can see it. It's different than writing, where you got to go read a bunch of paragraphs to see if something was taken or not. So,
spoken like an artist instead of a writer.
But, okay. Exactly. But knowing that all of that is happening on the writing side and on the art side, I think is really healthy for, quote unquote, for lack of a better term, the industry or movement of AI and large language model image and text generation. We don't want these things to be taking people's work and doing it without any kind of credit or all, you know, some of these issues will remain, and we're still going to be arguing about this for years, I think. But these are steps in the right direction, regardless of their motivation. If it was lawsuits, fine. But they're the big player, or one of the biggest players in this mix. And when the big player makes, you know, inroads like this toward trying to apply ethics, some kind of ethics to this stuff, even though it's moving so rapidly, I think is a really good thing.
I'm probably missing something here, but creators can submit, this is from the Verge article, creators can submit an image that they own the rights to and request its removal in a form on its website. Okay, I get that. Don't train on my data without my permission. I support that. I think you should have the right to decide whether your stuff gets trained on or not. Great, great job, OpenAI. A future version of DALL-E can then block results that look similar to the artist's image and style. Well, don't they have to train something to recognize whether the art is being created in that style? At which point, aren't they training a model to do just that? And the reason I bring that up is I think the fear of this is a little overblown, because again, yeah, you can get the generator to do something in the style of Scott Johnson, but that's no different than getting someone else to write in the style of Scott Johnson. To me, the problem is what you do with it. And maybe what I'm missing is scale. You can do this at scale, which you couldn't if you have to do it by hand. And that is a big difference. But I'm not sure that this is as big of a problem as people are fearing it's going to be, because you're having to give, if I'm reading this right, OpenAI the same tool that they might use to train the model in order to stop it from accidentally creating something that looks like your art.
Right. How would the model know to avoid your thing if it didn't know your thing, implicitly know your thing, so it could avoid making your thing? I think you're totally right. I think that's probably true, but that's where the nuance comes in with this whole conversation. It's like, well, this, we have to look at it this like almost like a person. And I don't mean like in the AI sense, oh, it's just like a person. I don't mean that. What I mean is, for this thing to actively avoid this and apply these quote unquote ethical standards, they have to know what they're being ethical for. And so in this case, as Tom described it, you have to train it on the thing they're avoiding. So it seems goofy and backwards. And would it be better if it just never knew your style? Maybe. But I don't think that's realistic. I think it's going to need to know what, to use the name, Salvador Dali's work looks like for it to avoid outputting Salvador Dali and making his people mad. You know? So, yeah, I think you have to train it on everything. It's complicated.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. What is also complicated sometimes,
especially if you know Salvador.
he's
tough.
Back in August, I don't know what I'm doing, but some people seem to think that what I do is okay, and I've been doing it for a long time. So I conducted a seminar called How to Make a Great Podcast. Good news, we recorded it. You can get that session in the new DTNS Patreon store. I explain the foundation of podcast producing, how I do things, share some ideas and experiences on how I think a podcast can be made great. And you can get that seminar, if you're interested, either as a downloadable file that you can keep and watch whenever you want, or streaming. If you'd rather have it just available in the cloud and you don't have to worry about the file, you can pick which one you want. Just go to patreon.com/shop. Amazon held its devices and services event Wednesday, spending the majority of its time touting the services part, upgrades to its voice assistant, thanks to the inclusion of large language model support, finally. Let's see what old Alexa has in store. Amazon says it should sound more natural. It should respond faster, be better at using context, so you can just speak in natural language. You don't have to keep repeating the wake word. You can have ongoing conversations. For example, Amazon says you should just be able to say, "I'm cold," and it will then adjust the thermostat because it knows what you mean when you say that. For smart homes, you should be able to just make a list of what you want your devices to do, and Amazon will be able to create a new smart home routine for you. Amazon's example to The Verge on this was, "Alexa, every morning at 8 a.m., turn up the light, play wake-up music for my kid in his bedroom, and start the coffee maker." Other smart home smarts include smart lighting, which can take into account brightness, time of day, and motion to intelligently decide whether to turn lights on or off automatically. Discovery should be easier, too. Apparently, after you add a new smart light, you can just say, "Turn on the new light," and it'll know. Pre-built features in third-party devices will be supported as well. So if you have, the example they gave was GE's colored light bulbs, you can say, "Make it look spooky in here." And then it'll turn orange and black, I assume. Or if you have a Roomba, you can say, "The floor is dirty." And then the Roomba will be like, "Oh, I'll go clean that up." These features are called dynamic controller and action controller, respectively, and require participation from the device makers to make it work. So it's not just a generalized thing. A few other things here. Amazon showed off Map View, which, yeah, if you have an iPhone or an iPad that has the LiDAR sensor, the most recent ones do, you can create a map of your home and then display all your devices on a map so you can control them from there. You can just look at the family room light, tap it, and turn it on and off. AI upgrades will work on all Echo models going back to the launch of version 2014, the very first one. New upgraded voices system coming to the BMW cars as well. And the large language model-powered smarts come into the Fire TV search function so that you can search in natural language and narrow down your results that way. As it gets more capable, Amazon says it might start to monetize some of this. since they can't get you to buy anything through these speakers. Amazon told The Verge, the idea of a superhuman assistant that can supercharge your smart home and more, work complex tasks on your behalf, could provide enough utility that we will end up charging something for it down the road. Now, the company is going to introduce the upgrade for free to begin with through a preview program. So if you're in the U.S. in the coming months, look for that. Everybody gets a chance at the non-smart home upgrades through that preview program. But if you want the smart home stuff I mentioned, that's invite only. All right, let's pause there before we get to the hardware. What are our hopes and dreams for these upgrades to the voice assistant?
Well, okay. So we've got a new piece of kids hardware, the Echo Pop Kids, coming with branded content like Marvel or Disney for $50, which includes Amazon Kids Plus, a new Fire HD Kids Plus Pro for older kids, and Fire HD 10 Kids, which starts at $190 for upgraded battery life and processors.
Let's get into the hardware. Amazon also announced the Echo Show 8 with spatial audio and room adaptation or improved sound, similar to how Sonos speakers work. Home screen content will change when it detects you're nearby. Pre-orders starting now for $150, shipping next month. And Amazon introduced upgraded Echo frames with longer battery life, upgraded audio, and multi-point pairing. There are also new frame styles, so you can keep it fashionable. Amazon Echo frames sell for $270.
A new Fire 4K stick with Wi-Fi 6 for $50 also was announced. The Fire TV Max streaming stick has Wi-Fi 6E, Dolby Vision, HDR, HDR 10+, and Dolby Atmos audio for $60. A $120 version of Fire TV soundbar works with Fire TV devices without setup for $120. So you're paying for a little setup. All Fire TVs and Echo Shows also get ambient art, which you can alter with voice commands, again, using some generative AI in the process.
Three new Blink security devices, including a camera range extender for $50 coming next year, a battery extension pack for Outdoor 4, that one's $30, and a new floodlight camera for $160, pre-orders on that now, and a new Ring Stick-Up Cam Pro has a radar-powered 3D motion sensor.
A new 8-inch Echo Hub is a Thread border router and Matter controller that you can mount on the wall or smart home control and other smart display functions for $180.
I am very excited about the new Eero Mesh Wi-Fi because I use Eero, and even if Amazon owns them, I still love them. The Max 7 has Wi-Fi 7 support. Wi-Fi 7 isn't even a fully certified standard, so it's forward compatible. 10 gigabit Ethernet ports and can support more than 200 connected devices. Pricey. Starts at $600, and you can get it in packs of 1, 2, or 3.
And an accessibility feature for the Fire Max 11 tablet will let you control smart home devices, video, audio, and more with your eyes with a feature called Eye Gaze. A new $6 per month service called Emergency Assist can call emergency contacts if something goes wrong and use voice commands to connect with assistants directly. Okay, we have talked about software. We have talked about hardware. What do we think? Quick thoughts, Scott Johnson.
Well, to me, all of this new hardware, this avalanche of hardware that we just talked about, depends on how good this improved language model based AI stuff is with the A word. If she's that much better, and I can have the kinds of conversations with her that I'm currently taking for granted on things like ChatGPT, which I've become very accustomed to. I don't want that to go away. I'm all in on the future of some of that. If she can exhibit some of those same sorts of responsive answers, even when my question may not be perfect, or there can be some intuiting of what I mean, some of that Tom laid out earlier, I think all this hardware then suddenly seems more interesting to me. Without it, none of this seems interesting to me because the current state of the A word and the Echo ecosystem is not all that great. It feels behind. It feels like it's lagging. For that matter, so does Siri. So does OK G word. They all kind of have lagged for me in terms of catching up with what's happening on the cutting edge of all of this, which ChatGPT and others are at. So for me, all of this hardware sounds awesome in the shadow of The A word is now like legitimately good at giving you what you want, when you want it, and how you want it. Then I'm interested in all of this. And these don't seem like high prices, $120 for this or that. Not as big a deal. But if it was all like status quo, I don't know, man. I would, yeah. I don't think any of this would be exciting.
There have been rumblings, you know, from inside and outside Amazon and Google, talking about the assistance, you know, of like, you know, everything is kind of it. There were such bigger hopes for all of these assistants, and they're not really what they've promised to be, especially when you look at all of the AI, you know, ChatGPT type stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of disagree. I feel like I'm more or less in the Amazon ecosystem. I do use Sonos speakers. So there are certain Echo speaker functionality that either comes to me or just never does. But for the most part, I can do what I want to do. I tell, you know, my lights to do what I want them to do. I tell my TV to turn on and off. I, you know, order things for my groceries. I do not think this is a bad life. But I understand that if, you know, you're a company like Amazon, you want way more from a person like me. If I am a person who is not shy about, you know, speaking out loud what I would like the assistant to do, they would like to make way more money off of me. And, you know, I'm here for it. I will play around with this.
To me, it's a contextual thing. Like, if I ask my Echo to play back a certain band that I like, if that band is not super easy to distinguish, like if I say REM, she's going to know and she'll play me an REM playlist. But if I say play me Live, that word's too weird. It's a band and I loved them in the 90s, but it's weird. It's hard to SEO that name. There are other bands called The Band and Band and things like that. I would love it if she could know more than that. I did this with my own podcast. I can say, hey, A word, play the morning stream. And it knows to play the latest morning stream.
I love that we're calling her A word.
But yeah. If I say, hey, same name, play me Core, my other podcast about video games, she really struggles because Core is she doesn't understand. She tries to play me some music by some band.
Yeah.
This is really convoluted. Now, I'm not saying this is just a music application, but it's one example of if she can become, have a stronger vernacular, a stronger communication, and more intuitiveness and all those things that we want to apply to AI, then I find the music I want and the podcast I want and more content, home device stuff that I want suddenly becomes a lot more viable to me because I'm not just getting the very baseline basic stuff, which I agree is cool, but I just think it could be cooler.
I think the future of Amazon Smart Assistance is better after this announcement for me than it was before. And you alluded to this earlier, Sarah, that people have been criticizing these voice assistants and that Amazon was hoping we would use them to all shop more on Amazon. And that is definitely not what we're doing. Because I'm the same as you. I use it to turn lights on and off, you know, get a notification that there might be a storm coming or something. That doesn't make Amazon ongoing money, which is what it wanted to do. It's why it was putting out all those weird integrations with shopping and constantly is like, hey, would you like to buy this or that?
Look at the Echo Show. The Echo Show was designed for me to walk by and go, ooh, yes, add to my shopping list. And then buy it. That doesn't never happen, but no. For the most part, I'm like, oh, look, the weather, 75.
So what it looks to me like is they are trying to improve the voice assistant, trying to catch up. They were ahead of the game in 2014, and it's perfectly normal that they're going to be a little behind this late in the game 9 years later, but they're making strides. If they fulfill on all the promises they made in this announcement, then they should be able to say, okay, you know, we've got a much more capable voice assistant and get more people to buy them. That's important because a lot of people were thinking Amazon might back out of this industry, and it doesn't look like they are. The other thing was that
I know, and I was kind of worried about that, to be honest, you know, because it's like even at the, you know, the very, you know, low level of just being like, hey, you know who, turn TV on. I am used to doing that to the point where I do that in places where someone's like, who are you talking to? And I'm like, oh, you don't, Okay.
So the good and the bad news is it looks like they hit on a monetization strategy that doesn't involve retail. Not that they're going to give up on trying to sell you stuff. They will. But they told The Verge a super intelligent smart home helper. And I'm like, oh, I know what you're going to do. You'll keep making this available for free on your Echo. You're not going to pay to use voice service on your Echo, but there's going to be fancier options probably related to the smart home. Oh, do you want to be able to program your smart home better, easier through Matter and Thread? Pay for the smart home assistant version of this, and they can get some ongoing subscription revenue out of that. Possibly there'll be some non-smart home stuff where they're like, your voice assistant could be even better if you're a Prime subscriber, or if you add on this thing. But it seems like that's the direction they're going. And it also seems like when you look at all this hardware, we're not seeing the drone that flies around your house or the Astro robot or anything like that here. This is all very mundane.
This is all real life stuff.
Smart assistant, smart home stuff. I think they also see this as like, oh, this is our advantage in the smart home. And I think it really is. And they're going to try to capitalize on that.
Yeah.
Also, the Eero stuff. I've got an Eero situation where I am now. Works well. It could be bumped up a little bit, and that is partly on the telco side. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the Eero Wi-Fi stuff that I think would I mean most likely be compared to Google Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, there's Belkin kind of same idea stuff like that. There's a few mesh competitors out there, but and I haven't tried them all because I'm satisfied with the Eero, and I've rarely run into problems with it. Even mixing older versions with the more recent version, the 6 version, it's pretty stable and works pretty well.
Does it concern you at all that 7's not fully standardized?
This goes back. There's a long tradition of this. I don't know if you remember, like back in 2004, everybody was putting out pre-N 802.11 pre-N routers because the standard was pretty much there. It just hadn't been ratified yet. So they're like, well, let's just put out the routers with the support, and then we can do a firmware update to tweak it a little when it gets ratified. But no, this I don't think that's a concern. That's an advantage. It means like, once Wi-Fi 7 is ratified, you're already in the game. You've got it there.
Sure. 600 is a little high, but hey, it's fast.
That's real expensive. That's the only, that's the big downside there.
Yeah.
Well, if you happen to be traveling with a smartphone, don't have an Eero hub anywhere near you, and you have Tap to Pay capabilities, Chris Christensen has a handy tip for you.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. One thing that happened in the pandemic that you may not have noticed if you don't live near a major city is that a lot of cities are moving their mass transit system from using whatever complicated system they had before to using Tap to Pay. And so using your Apple Watch, your iPhone, or your Android phone without getting any special pass, you can just tap on in the New York subway, in the London subway, and I suspect in other ones that are going on right now. So if you're heading to one of those cities, for many other cities in the world, master your Tap to Pay skills. Also easier is it used to be that if you wanted to get a week-long pass, you would have to buy something special. And now, for instance, in the New York subway, as soon as you do a certain number of taps on and off for the rest of the week, from Monday to Sunday, every other ride is free. So get ready to Tap to Pay on your next trip. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Everyone who's not in the U.S. is laughing at us right now. But yes, yes, we're finally getting it. I was using my watch to tap to pay on transit in Japan like a long time ago. And just being in Korea, they have Tap to Pay for Samsung, but not for anybody else.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
All right, let's check out the mail.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there was some time where the only store that I wanted to go to was like Samsung Pay or nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They love their Samsung over there.
Well, yeah, it's got a local advantage. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
All right, let's do it. Rob followed up on our RFID Amazon Just Walk Out tech conversation that we had with Shirley Henry on yesterday's show. Rob said the tag itself isn't powered and is dormant. He was referring to, I think it was me, just sort of being like, does that become an issue if you have the tag somehow in a piece of, you know, a garment that you take out of the store and use going forward? Rob says, when you pass through the reader itself emits a lower power field that's enough to trigger the tag to respond with a small packet of data like an item number or UPC. The reader's then able to pick detect that response, and then the sale continues. So if you're sitting at home, that tag is still there, but it's dormant. If you have something that could read it, like a Flipper Zero or some sort of Android phone that you might have near you, you could trigger it and get the code. But without readers literally everywhere, they can't really be used to track you or collect data.
Yeah, and I got an answer to my question about where they are. They tend to be on the tag that is attached to the clothing. Somebody said look for a kind of a thicker sticker with what looks like wires, which is actually the antenna for the RFID. So if you take the tags off your clothes, which most people take the price tag off, right, then you're fine.
Yep.
Well, Scott Johnson, no matter how many RFID tags you might have on your clothing, we're happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
I have 12 on me right now, 12 separate tags.
Yeah, cool pants, by the way. But let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
Yeah, I've been tracking them. They're good.
Yeah, because that's how it works. I usually talk on the show about the video game shows and stuff that's sort of tech tangential, but I am going to mention filmsack.com. And the reason I'm going to do that is because that is a podcast we have been doing since 2009. And we still love it somehow. And that means I think listeners really like it. So anyway, if you like movies, old, new, and everything in between, and you want to hear four hosts discuss these things each and every Saturday, check it out today at filmsack.com.
Patrons, stick around for the extended show Good Day Internet. I mentioned Astro, the rolling robot from Amazon. We acquired one earlier this year, and Roger has been trying it. So I gave you my impressions of it earlier this summer. We're going to check in with Roger's testing of the Astro robot. Stick around.
You can catch this show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'd love to have you join us live if you can, but we're always on demand as well. We'll be back tomorrow talking what Microsoft is calling its special event and all the details within, with Chris Ashley joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All right, folks, we need a title for this Amazonapalooza. So go over to showbot.tv/DTNS2 and submit Amazonapalooza or something better to the...
It's nice that you gave him a little example to work with.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what not to do. Now you come up with something better. Go into our Twitch chat, go into our Discord, and you can learn from the other folks in there how to submit it if you don't know already. Get those in. Sarah's going to be perusing your submissions and tell us which one. Which
peruse.
One. Peruse with your eyes. All right, Roger. You've got a robot in your house. How's it going?
It's kind of weird because several weeks, I've had it off because we were cleaning and I unplugged it and I had to move it. But before then, it was a very interesting experience. What I thought would happen didn't actually end up happening. And what we ended up using it for was a lot less than I figured I would be using it for. Now, I will preface this by explaining my house is older. It was built in the mid-30s, so it's very narrow hallways. It's also very cluttered. Tom's been to my place. It's very cluttered with stuff. I also have two small children.
Those are both fairly normal things for people, right? A lot of people live in older houses, and a lot of people have cluttered houses, for sure.
Yeah. A lot of clutter. So the two standout things that I noticed, one was initially it worked fine. It was great. But then at some point, and I think it's because I physically lifted it up and moved it to another part of the room because it got stuck on the rug, it started losing its understanding of the location of what room it was in. And so it would constantly like, I'm trying to figure out where I'm at, trying to figure out where I'm at, trying to figure out where I'm at. And it never got over that. Everything else functionally worked on the Astro except for that. So initially it could do the things that you needed to do. You could survey, could kind of do the little patrol, play hide and seek, although not too well, but mostly because my kids are really bad at hide and seek. Like, you know, they hide behind a pillow and they think it's hide and seek.
Sure.
And the second thing that I found very interesting is my kids ended up using it 90% of the time as a rolling tablet. So because the face was a tablet, they used it as a tablet. So they were watching YouTube videos. Now, they were using voice commands to pull things up, but they were using it as a tablet. And so really only moved so they could find a comfortable place to lean against the couch or another piece of furniture and just watch. So it wasn't like
not just a tablet.
Pet.
In the sense of, like, I don't know what I would think a tablet, but like a TV, basically.
Yeah, essentially, right? TV. It's like a super convenient TV. And I found it to be, like, maybe because I gave both my kids their own tablets, but it was just, I think, for them, it was just a very natural, well, the head's a tablet, so I might as well just use it like the one I had before.
Yeah.
And
that kind of makes sense. And that's very interesting that the kids didn't find an unexpected use, which kids often do for this one. Because I always wondered, like, oh, is there something else? Like, I'm sure they went through trying to tell it to dance and do all that stuff when you first got it, right?
Yeah, they asked it all sorts of questions. Mm-hmm. You know, they would ask very specific things that I'm pretty sure the Amazon
the new large language model version would handle better. Probably.
Well, and I was And I'm wondering if that would work better because they were asked. My eldest daughter watches a lot of TikTok, so she was asking very TikTok specific things about Five Nights at Freddy characters or things in Roblox, right? Like all these things. And the other bummer thing was because they thought they see it as a tablet, they expected all the stuff that they had on their Fire tablets just to naturally come over and work the same way, and it doesn't.
Doesn't always do that.
So. Yeah, and so, like, the way they perceive it and the way I perceive it as a rolling, you know, automated Internet of Things device that, you know, does a multitude of things in a rolling chassis. My kids just saw it as a rolling thing with a tablet for a head.
I mean, did they ever really get into the idea that there is a robot in this house and robots
yes,
are cool?
Yes, they really liked the idea.
Before they met it, like, they were really into it.
Yeah. Oh, no. So Ellie, my eldest, was literally watching on Google, on YouTube through my Shield voice-activated Google Voice device all the videos she could pull up by Astro. She was really excited. But when she got it, it amounted to a few novelty things like the dancing and all the other stuff. But then just sitting down and watching videos on it.
Yeah, interesting.
Did you use it for security stuff, like when you were out of the house ever to kind of poke around?
I tried to, but this is where the not knowing where it's at and it was trying to figure out what room it was in. I'm at the point where I'm thinking I'm just going to have to do a factory reset and start all over again.
And do the and remap.
It did the first time it was working fine and I think because I moved it like 4 feet over in the same room, like there's a little carrying handle on the butt or the
it's supposed to be able to recover from that. I moved it a few times
but every time I try to do the, you know, every time I try to resolve it always gets hung up. Like, it just can't, it's just like, I don't know what's wrong. Or I don't know what's wrong. It just can't figure it out. So
do you ever restart it?
I tell it to restart itself and I've turned it off and on.
Yeah.
But I think it needs, like, maybe my house is weird. That's why I'm thinking my house is weird, because maybe it's just too much stuff. Also, my living room is uninsulated. Like, it doesn't have an attic space like the rest of the house. So during the summer, it got super hot. So I was wondering maybe if that threw off its IR.
Did you melt Astro?
Sold them for parts.
I don't know.
But it works fine in the other rooms. Like, it can't be the heat. Like that's.
Well, all the other functions, even in that room, work fine. It's just like it doesn't know what room it's at, and it that kind of eliminates all the other functions.
I guess when it gets hot, I sometimes forget what room I'm in. So
the camera works pretty well. Like you could tell it to take a picture. Takes various unflattering, granted, because I'm not dressed the best or comb my hair, but unflattering pictures of the family. And you know, this is the thing I'm wondering, because as you guys are going with the AI models of the Amazon announcement, I'm wondering if we would at least fix some of the you know, more annoying issues of just, you know, my kids asking it, you know, very specific, you know, like very.
Yeah, the voice assistant part of it, which isn't related to it being a rolling robot, but that part of it might improve. I get the feeling that Amazon is done with this phase of its existence where it tries out weird products. I think that part is over. That we're going to see a more practical Amazon going forward. Although they're getting Panos Panay. We did not see him. He did not mount the stage, despite his unexpected departure from Microsoft earlier this week. But you know, maybe he'll inject some new interesting things. But given what we saw today, it just felt like Amazon is buckling down. And that's been the mood under Andy Jassy since he took over from Jeff Bezos, is we're a grown-up company now. We need to make dollars and cents. We're not going to mess around with drones inside your house anymore.
Yeah,
I will say the if they could get to work, like an outdoor version of Astro, to me makes a little more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like something that could parade either, especially at night. The other night, oh, geez, I don't know if you have coyote issues where you are, Scott, but last night I was woken up by the yipping of, I didn't know they run in packs now, but a pack of at least 7 to 8 coyotes right outside my garage door. And I was thinking, like, I really want to shoo them away, but what am I going to do?
Oh, one man against, yeah, you could send the
like,
robot
have
out.
Something where it could just kind of scoot out for me and just, like, do an alarm or weird,
or,
you know, epileptic lights to
you could
to
make
move
Astro
them,
look
away.
Like a coyote, and then it could go learn or, what they're up to. You know, kind of blend in.
So sort of communicate with like,
yeah.
The watch.
The large language model needs to be trained on coyote for that to work, I guess.
Because I could totally see this being, especially if you have a large estate, if you have a large property, and you want to do something that covers it, and you don't necessarily want a flying drone, this could be pretty handy.
Yeah. I feel like if the... To combine newer, better personal assistant technology with this robot does represent a potential, definitely an improvement on the whole idea. Because Tom's right. Like it's not meant to be, here's a new Amazon voice assistant. It's a robot that also uses Amazon's voice assistant.
Yeah.
But if that robot's better at giving you the answers you want in the context you're using the robot, I think that just makes for a better robot.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that because it does know what room it's in as an Echo Show.
Yeah.
So if it's rolling around, it would have to know what room it's in, which was a problem for one of Roger's rooms. But it was never a problem for me. So that may just be a unique circumstance, like you're saying. But if you're like, if it's rolling along with you and you're like, hey, Astro, turn off the lights in here, right? Yeah. Hey, turn off, I don't know though, turn on the lights out in the living room, you could say to any Amazon Echo. It doesn't really need Astro. But yeah, well, I imagine there is some contextual stuff when it's in the room and it knows what rooms exist.
Yeah, like why couldn't Roger say, you're in the room, some room, Roger, and you go, hey, Astro, or you know her name, go tell my wife that I'm going to be 20 minutes late for dinner, and also she needs to text me that info she promised, or some more complicated thing. And
like
that robot
assistant.
Goes, yeah, and then it goes, drives in there and says all the stuff you said, and then even
we can do that now.
More stuff.
Yeah,
sorta. Like it's not great at specifics; it's good at generalizations.
I
think the more it can get specific, the better this device is for me.
The thing is, as a robot, it's nice rolling around, but it also, I really think this the Astro could use an arm, a manipulator of some type, because if you like say pick that up for me or something, where it's not just a simple go between, but it could, like, for example, hey, can you pick up that pen I dropped, or if you grab a soda, it could open the refrigerator door and actually pull it out instead of having my kid, which she'll never do that.
Yeah, that is the biggest downside. But my wife, Astro, is it can't do anything. You can't reach out and manipulate stuff.
It could tell you, like, I see it, but I mean, I put in your, take the cold beverage out of the fridge, put it in your butt, you know, container, and move over to our mat so I can drink something cold without physically getting up. I mean, it's weird because I kind of make my kids do that right now, so in a way they're kind of like a robot. But I'm legally obliged to see them through.
Here's an example, and this isn't gonna work this way. But if I said to this device, this robot, like let's say it's right here, right now, and then on Thursday I finish up Core. Core's got huge show notes, and I say, "Hey, robot, can you do me a favor? And this is how I would talk to it. There's a spreadsheet up in my Google Docs that's for this show Core. I just finished it. Can you go please make a 600 character summation of everything we talked about?
You don't need a robot to do that.
I know. This is a bad example, but I'm just saying. I'm trying to illustrate the complexity. If I can say that to this robot and say, all right, then meet me upstairs with that. I'll be up there in an hour or whatever. That's fascinating to me. Like that level of interaction and output, whatever the question is super interesting. And I think those things then lead to manipulating the world around it. We start to get robots that are more affordable and in your house that not only understand what you asked for, but go and make the meal you just said to make, and does it without having to have exact line for line. It intuits what you know because you've already made this meal. It knows what you want you to make. Like, I'm mixing all my use cases here, but to me, it's the same principle. Smarten the thing up. Suddenly there's stuff we haven't thought about we can use it for.
You could have, and yes, we are mixing things up because there's the improvements to the voice assistant through large language models that will work whether it's rolling around your house or not, right? And exactly. Those are useful. Then there's the, like, but I want it to be able to move and do things part of this, which is interesting. But Astro can't manipulate things, so it can't cook. It can't grab Roger's cold drink. I think the problem with Astro is that it is a tablet, a rolling tablet, and there's just not much of a use case for a rolling tablet. You either need a thing that can go do things and move around, or you need a thing that can do stuff in the cloud and bring it back to you. But you kind of don't need one on top of the other, do you?
It's a weird measure, right? Like, it's like,
that's
full
what
robot.
It feels like.
Yeah,
exactly. It does very feel much like, hey, we started this robot, but A, we either ran out of time, or someone else thought maybe we should go a different direction. It's half finished. Why don't we just, scab on at the voice assistant on top of it? And so it will be like a robot that, tells you things, but really can't, do any. I mean, even as a security measure, I have cameras around the house. It's faster for me to look at my phone.
I guess Astro can get into a part that isn't covered by your camera if you don't have
camera
coverage.
That's true. It can. Yeah. But at that point, you're reaching for things for it to do. It's kind of like hiring someone. Like, oh, maybe I should have hired you because I don't need
I spent so much money on it. I should come up with something to make it worth its while.
Yeah, I guess I
mean,
just see
it. It really sounds bad the way that's phrased, but in a way, that's kind of how I feel. Is like how... There has to be a good use case for this.
I left my dog out last night at about 11 o'clock. I went, crap, I got to put her in her kennel. I would love a little robot I could just tell to go put the dog in the kennel.
Or is she on a leash or he on a leash?
She's fine all day just hanging around in the house. It's just at night she sleeps in this kennel. She's kind of kennel trained to do it. And usually she goes in there on her own. I just like to make sure the little door's shut. So I would love to say to a thing, go make sure Rainer's
shut the door on the kennel. Yeah.
And that's it. And then to go to sleep knowing it was done, not have to think about it. And if it wasn't done, the robot's not going to complain. It's not going to walk in there and go, you told me to do a thing you already did. That was a waste of my time. It's not going to do that. Not yet.
Yeah.
So I, you know, one of the cool things is the remote view where you can see on your, you know, a synced account on your smartphone. You can see through, well, ostensibly through Astro's eyes, through the camera on the Astro, which is kind of cool. And I was hoping at some point they would have a ability to put your face, like the way that FaceTime does, like a variation animated version of your face. So if I'm talking to the kids, it's going to be like this thing on the screen, like me, like, go to bed, you know, quit watching your tablets, even though you're talking and staring to a robot tablet telling you to go to sleep.
I love that they really just, they settled on
they
roaming
television.
They literally just
see it as a tablet. Yeah. It's, I mean, I would have loved one as a kid, but that's what I would use it for. I mean, it's not fast enough to jump over things like Hot Wheels, like as a kid, like you would make little obstacles.
In a way, this is like the most, this is the most meaningful part of the test you guys have done with this device, because they are completely non-biased in this scenario.
Yeah.
The kids, they're just like, is it cool? Is it not? Is it a TV? I guess it is. Okay, I'll watch it like I do that.
This is what, like, it's good at. That's what I'm going to use it for.
Yeah, it feels like Amazon needs a few kids in their testing center. I don't know.
I'm just sitting here staring at the price of the Eero Max 7.
It's expensive, dude.
Bucks. A three pack is $1,700.
Oh,
that's like a lot.
Like a standard. Oh, jeez.
That's a lot.
17, that's too much. Like 170.
I feel like that'll come down.
Yeah, it probably
quick,
will.
Maybe. I hope so. That's.
It seems there would be, if you were upgrading and already were an Eero customer, you'd.
I mean, that be good enough for like a hotel lobby if I'm spending $1,700.
Well, hotel lobbies are pretty terrible.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like $1,700, but like, you know, like you install it and you don't have to worry about, you know, guests complaining that they're not getting a connection, or they can accommodate, you know, upwards of 30 or 40, 50 people at one time.
The Eero 6 Plus is $90. A three pack is $195. The next version is $600, and a three pack is $1,700. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Why is it so much?
How much faster is Wi-Fi 7? I mean, is it insane? Is it like the greatest?
Well, it's
10
gigabit per second capable. Of course, you need to have the service that does that, and nobody does. And Wi-Fi 6 Plus or 6E is 10 gigabit. To me, it's not even so much the speed as it is the capacity, 200 plus connected devices. You know, with everybody getting so many smart home things.
Yeah.
But the 6 Plus is Zigbee and Thread. I'm looking to see if they give a number of devices, but I'm pretty sure it's 100 for that one.
Man, you'd be better off buying that new one, the newest 6 Plus or whatever.
Yeah, the 6 Plus, yeah.
And then just wait for a price reduction and you'd still save money. That's just crazy. That's too much. There must be something about 7 that requires something.
They're
crazy.
Also huge. They're like tall.
Maybe it's a whole
instead
new world.
Of flat.
Yeah, that's wild. Too much money.
Maybe they put all of Andy Jassy's bitcoins in them.
How much was the robot?
It's like $2,300.
Okay. I'm just saying, you're getting close to robot prices there.
Not
right.
Insignificant.
With that router.
No. $1,600. Sorry. I overestimated. So it's the same price. It's actually the same price as a three-pack of Eero Max 7s.
That's crazy. So you need a robot smart enough to go to your neighbors and steal their Eero Max 7 and bring it back. Done. And you
don't
spend the same amount of money.
Advocate theft, Scott.
Oh, theft. Oh, shoot. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Not okay.
Also, this robot cannot pick anything up, so don't try it.
Yeah, it just has to stare at you until it creeps you out into giving it what it wants.
It's a war of attrition, and the screen just says, I want your routers, all three of them, the whole set.
Come on.
Seven.
Just give them to me. I'm a TV.
I'm a roving children's television. Give me what I want. I love that.
So I think your conclusion isn't too different from mine, Roger. On the Astro robot.
That's a rolling tablet. That's my takeaway.
That it's not worth the money. It does some interesting things, but
I mean, honestly, a manipulator arm being able to, I think, would add, I mean, if it didn't increase the price, it would add a lot. Because I also have a lot of doors in my house that are sometimes closed, but not, like they're ajar, but they're not shut. And I do that during the summer months, so when it cools, I'm not like blowing the AC in the rooms that don't do anything. Like it'll just sit there and wait for you to open it. And then it's like, well, like my kids can open it.
You need to have Star Trek doors.
Yeah. That was my impression.
I can even make that noise.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's more like a whisper. It's more like a shush.
They made fun of it in Airplane too. Remember they did. They go through the doors.
Yeah, that had Shatner in it, didn't it?
Yeah.
Airplane 2, not as good as Airplane 1. Just gonna put
well,
it
Airplane
out
1 was a send up of that one airline
Airport
drama.
77 or whatever it was. Or
like if you watch it next to each other, they're like note for note.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's almost like the reason it's good is it mapped right on top of a very good suspenseful.
Well, if you parody something, you're gonna parody something good, right? No one's ever gonna do a parody of an Asylum movie because those are self-generating parodies themselves.
Yeah.
Do you know about the Global Citizen Festival coming up in New York?
No, I've never even heard of that. What is it?
I don't know all of what it is, but I know it has like tons of musicians, like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Lauryn Hill, Jungkook from BTS, Anita, D-Nice, a bunch of people.
It's not sponsored.
Never heard of this.
Something is it?
Global Citizen.
You should go, Tom.
It's the first thing that pops.
You're a global citizen.
Oh, so it's anti-poverty.
Oh, well, you're not pro poverty. Get over there. Get this done.
I don't know. I'm on the fence.
On the fence.
I'm just kidding. Of course not. Yeah.
I haven't heard of that.
News
to me.
It's got some headliners. It's got some stuff going on.
Oh, I watched Flea in that documentary about Woodstock 99, and let's just say I don't ever want to see Flea in Woodstock 99 again.
Really? Too much
Flea?
I won't
from
say
the
why.
Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah. I like Flea. Still like him.
Did something happen?
Yes. I'll say it that way. You will not forget what you see Flea do. That's what I'll say. Now, everybody out there can rush to the Netflix documentary and find out what I'm talking about. But
made you want to flee, did he?
Kind of. A little bit. I mean, whatever. It's rock and roll. You do what you do, but man, burned into my head.
It's more Flea than you were ready for, I guess.
More Flea than I ever have experienced in my life.
We want to thank every single person watching or listening right now for being a patron. Y'all are the best. Thank you for supporting us. We don't have anyone by name to thank. If you've given us a raise and we can't tell, apologies that we can't give you the proper thanks for that. We're not seeing that data right now, but we do appreciate it, and we hope that more of you are finding value in the show as we continue to do the show into its 10th year. We also want to thank everybody on Twitch for joining us there. Zoe gave us some bits. Paley Glendale was giving out subscription gifts to people. Moose2271 gave us gifts. Quaid resubscribed for the 24th month. Paley Glendale cheered us with bits. And we got some new followers. Dame Troid Hunter, Commander Ventura. Thanks to everybody who supports us there. Technomench cheered us with some bits too. I think that wraps it up, right? Any last words, anybody?
Oh, I just want the internet to have a good day. That's all.
Well, yeah.
By all means.
Good day, internet.
Yeah, I second day. That emotion.
Here.
Have a good day, internet.